We should get a red light in like radio studios where they have like the red light that says you're on air.
Right. Not a bad idea.
So that I can like press it. Mm-hmm. And then when I press it, we're on air. The light is figuratively on. Let's just say the light is on.
Some of us are brighter than others.
What is that referring to me?
Thanks. I'm just in life in general.
Yeah. Wonderful. It's a good way to start a podcast.
Insult the host.
Insult the host, who's also your wife, who also gets to decide whether you're getting laid tonight or not.
This is going very well.
I hold a lot of power in this specific room. There are other rooms where you hold more power, but I would say that I hold the most power in this room. You know where else I hold the most power?
Tell me.
In the bathroom.
Okay.
Where I'm taking a bath, mm-hmm. and you're sitting, mm-hmm. and I get you to read to me, which is like a regular occurrence, I would say, here.
I would say it's a wonderful occurrence.
And regular. So I'll take a bath and I'll have you read to me. And usually it's a book that I choose. But the other night you started telling me a story. Because I like it when you tell me bedtime stories. So last night you said that you were going to tell me a story. And so you had read earlier that day a New Yorker article. And you told me the story. And so tell us the first half of the story that you told me in bed last night after you read the article.
So it was about a polar explorer, or a daredevil, you might say, and he was going all the way across Antarctica with a team of two guys following the path of this guy, Shackleton, who's this other British explorer from 100 years before. The guys did it on their own with the three guys, pretty much okay, and they were able to redo what Shackleton did. And because the guy, his name's Worsley, this Brit, felt incumbent to like do it on his own, he did the exact same thing without the two guys, just totally on his own.
Okay, so he decided, I'm gonna do this totally by myself, and he's doing this polar expedition.
Antarctica, he's gonna cross the entirety of the continent on
what
his
makes
own.
It an expedition? Okay, so I know I can't get off of this, but like I don't get why it's called an expedition. Like, is he exploring? Can we look? What is the definition of an expedition? Okay.
That's a fair question.
Is it because to me what this sounds like, and let's all be real about it, is this sounds like a hike. It sounds like he's hiking. He's hiking in Antarctica. Like, I mean, really, that's what it is.
It's very cool.
He's not exploring anything. It's not like it's new land, unexplored land, or anything like that. No. It's a hike. No. Okay, so I'm looking up expedition very slowly right now. Hold on. Give me 1 second, because I have so many. I have all of these windows open in my phone, and it's really hard for me to decide which one I can. Okay, you know what? I'm just going to open a new window. That's like the 7 millionth window. And I'm looking up expedition. Definition. So, a journey or voyage undertaken by a group of people with a particular purpose, especially that of exploration, scientific research, or war. Okay, so what it makes his trek through Antarctica a polar expedition rather than just a hike?
So what he's doing is retracing a particular part of the world that somebody who influenced him, one of his mentors, so to speak, first had a terrible experience doing. So
okay.
He's kind of just following in his footsteps.
Okay, so the first guy,
yeah.
He really did an expedition because
yeah.
He was exploring new territory.
No, his men died. It was harrowing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, this guy is just doing it for shits and giggles, basically. He just wants to say, hey, that guy did it. I did it, too.
Pretty much. And he got, you know, sponsors. He got the prince of Cambridge, Prince William, to, you know, call him on the phone, I guess, and make something of a big deal about it. It's in the spirit of previous polar explorers that were British. But in actuality, there's nothing being explored. He's not contributing to science. He's largely, as you might say, glorifying himself.
Okay. So at the part that you stopped, last night. That was part one. So he's basically, he's doing this expedition. He's all by himself. And he's made a promise to himself and to everybody else that he would do it unaided. So he can't stop for help at any of the checkpoints.
That's correct. And it's a self-imposed thing. There's no real reason for it other than to see if he can do it. Like a lot of people who are like ultra marathoners or people who would like think that they could be astronauts. You're doing this stuff not because somebody else told you to. It's a self-imposed, rigor that you put yourself through just to see if you can do it. And the fact that it's difficult is kind of the reason why you do it. You do it because it's a challenge, because you could die doing it. It seems silly, maybe, from a certain perspective. But from the perspective of the adventurer, let's say, if it's not an expedition, maybe it's an adventure. From the perspective of the adventurer, he feels like he has something to, like, prove to the world and probably most importantly to himself.
Okay, so this is the part that got me really going. Because this story is just, like, unbelievably, like, it's just pulsating with climax and adventure. And he's trekking through Antarctica and he's, like, dying. How many pounds does he have on him?
So when he set out on the expedition, he had 350 pounds of gear. And you carry it behind you in a sled. And then, of course, over time, the food, the freeze-dried food that you eat and the fuel and other provisions that you burn slowly through over time, that gets diminished, and so the weight gets less. But you're still, like, in unbelievably harrowing conditions, like, very, very cold. And so, like, he's got, at this point in the story, he's got bleeding hemorrhoids. He's got a front tooth that got knocked out when he bit into a freeze-dried protein bar. He's kind of losing his sanity or his grip on reality because he has nobody to talk to. And so, like, when he writes in his diary, it's, like, all very, like, another day. It sounds like misery every day. So it's extremely hard, and he might very well die out there on his own, and there's nobody there to save him.
Okay, but then he reaches a checkpoint.
No, he reaches the South Pole, and at the South Pole they have like a research station where there are other people who are, you know, working on other probably much more valuable science than he's doing. They are actually there, they're like, oh, hello, friend, pretty much, and then he just kind of continues on. He makes his camp away from them, does it all on his own. He doesn't want to be like a part of it.
Okay, and that night, he literally says goodbye to everyone. Like, he makes this, because he has this, like, a kind of like a broadcasting, you were saying?
Yeah, he's got a solar-powered satellite phone, and he can, like, you know, give a dispatch, make a recording, or make a phone call even to his wife and his kids back home in the UK.
Okay.
And so, like, he's, at this point in time, he's not that far from the halfway point, and he's feeling miserable. He's giving this dispatch like it's the end times. And to put this from the perspective of his wife, who has said this a couple of times in the story, she said, it's better to be a live donkey than a dead lion.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand her point of view, but as somebody who's also a little bit in their lion, so to speak, I also definitely identify with the spirit of adventure.
Okay, but so he's saying goodbye to his whole family. Like, he basically thinks he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks he's going to die while he's right next to the station. Right next to people who could save him. He really, like, he's literally doing this broadcast, like, kilometers away from this, from the station.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Okay, so my thing is that he's not curing it. Like, he's not doing this for anything but his own infamy. And this is what really bothers me.
Yeah.
Is that, like, I get the whole, you know, the whole, like, wanting to push yourself, right? But if you're going to push yourself to reach extraordinary lengths, then you should produce extraordinary results.
Right.
And what is he producing? Like, what result is he producing except the heartbreak of his family? And, like, he has, like, a wife who loves him. He has these kids at home. And he's okay with just dying so that people will tell this story about him. It's really just so that people can tell this story. And he can tell, maybe he can live to tell the story. But if he doesn't live, he knows that somebody's going to tell the story.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's dying for his own fame, basically. And I get wanting to make your mark on this world, but it's like, you know, like, I don't care about Hercules, you know? Give me Aristotle. I want Aristotle. But Hercules, I don't care about him. So it's like this whole, like, Hercules versus, like, Aristotle debate that we have going here, where I think that, like, if you're going to die pushing yourself to a limit, like, at least have that limit be something that's going to produce some sort of positive result for other people.
Can I skip to the end?
Okay, skip to the end.
This is an excellent point, and I'm actually glad that you made it the way you did.
What?
The last...
Does he get rescued?
No, he dies.
He dies?
He dies. Joanna and her children... This is the last sentence of the piece.
Yeah.
Joanna and her children dug a hole and buried Worsley's ashes in the frozen earth. Last sentence, full stop, goodbye.
I really hope they don't hear this. That's the only thing I have to say. You know, I feel really bad for them. See, they're the only people that lose in the end. I mean, did they make any money off this story at least?
For very little, I would imagine.
God damn it.
I don't think you wrote a book. No book.
No, she can write a book now.
Yeah, that would be wise.
Yeah, how she tried to convince her husband not to do the stupidest thing in the world. And he didn't listen. And guess what happened?
He died.
Yeah, so I think if we've learned anything from this episode or this story, and you can read it for yourself. It's in The New Yorker, and it's called...
The White Darkness, A Solitary Journey Across Antarctica by writer David Graham.
And can you also describe the picture of this guy? Is this one of the last pictures that was taken of this dude?
I would imagine so.
Is that the station right there?
I don't think that's quite the station. I think that's his camp.
Oh, that's his camp. Okay, yeah. Okay.
But it's a selfie, and in a selfie, he's wearing goggles to prevent from snow blindness. He's got on a full ski mask because it's very, very cold and windy. He's smoking a cigar. He's got the cigar perched in his teeth. One of his two front teeth is definitely missing, like all the way down to the root. And it's very, very obvious in the shot, kind of in a disgusting, like intentionally disgusting kind of way. And he's got what appear to be like suspenders or like a lederhosen kind of thing going.
Well, you guys can buy the article. I'm sure it's online. I think if there's anything to learn from this story about Worsley, if I'm saying that name correctly, and his expedition, is that he should have listened to his wife, who told him not to go because it was stupid. And I don't think anyone should die for a hike in Antarctica, because let's call it what it is. It's not an expedition. It's a hike. All right. So we're going to go ahead and take a hike right now.